Today, I want to talk about the implications of having a diabetic as the CEO of the American Diabetic Association. In my mind, this should mean excellent things, and that's what I'm hoping for. We're going to talk a little bit about an interview that I watched and why I'm slightly concerned but optimistic. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mind Blowing Health and Wellness with Violet. I'm Violet, your keto psychologist, and the reason that I make these videos is to help you to manage your mental health and physical health so that we can live happier lives. There were a lot of things that Tracy Brown said in the interview she did on Sisters for Fitness that had me very excited because I agreed with what she was saying. But there are a few things that I want to discuss today that I feel like, okay, there's still some work to be done there. Let's start with the good stuff. On Sisters for Fitness, they talked about the idea that diabetes is a silent killer. And they pointed out that, first of all, you're pre-diabetic, so insulin resistant, for so many years before you become diabetic. And even when you become diabetic, physically, there aren't many symptoms until you're at the stage where there's not much that can be done. Of course, there's heart issues that come about and possible amputations and vision issues, but that's so far down the road that many people have a false sense of security in just taking the medication and kind of pretending like the illness isn't actually happening. So I was really happy that Tracy pointed out that this kind of attitude towards diabetes is unacceptable. She also mentioned the idea that insulin resistance is pre-diabetes. It's one and the same, which again, all the doctors have been saying that for the longest while, right? Like, according to her numbers, 90% of people are pre-diabetic and they're unaware. Both Tracy Brown and Stephanie Gaines Bryant, the host, talk a little bit about their history and help us to understand how they became diabetic. And actually, the story is quite similar. They both were pregnant and diagnosed with diabetes and both put on medications. And actually, it's interestingly, both of them told a similar story that you're diabetic now, but don't worry about it because chances are you'll have the child and your health will go back to normal. However, in about 10-ish years after this, you probably will become diabetic again. And for Stephanie, it went exactly as predicted. She had her child, the diabetes went away, and approximately 10 years later, the diabetes came back. For Tracy, on the other hand, that's not what happened. She had her child, and the diabetes stayed with her. Now, according to Tracy, that first 5 years of being a diabetic, she was not overly concerned. She wasn't paying attention to it. She was doing what she was told to do. She was taking her insulin related to the way that she was eating and managing her diabetes in that fashion. And the only thing that actually led to her deciding to change what she was doing was her daughter's concern that she was going to pass from diabetes. So I want us all, first and foremost, to be worried about our doctors' idea that it's normal that 10 years after you're diabetic and in a pregnancy that you will automatically be diabetic 10 years from now. Part of the issue that I have with both of these ladies being given quite similar information is that in that similar information, there's actually not even any hint of the doctor giving them advice about how to make sure they do not become diabetic in the next 10 years. And so Tracy and Stephanie continued to eat normally. Tracy's interaction with her daughter, who was afraid for her mom to leave, caused Tracy to take action. And what I love about this is that she took action by doing research and understanding food and then changing her food because she recognized it was the thing in the equation she could actually affect. Insulin, she has no control over what her body's doing in production of insulin, but the food she eats, she recognized that she could control that. And she started to. And in controlling her food, she was able to get off of insulin. She was able to go from taking four diabetic medications down to taking just one. And this interview that I watched, which was at the beginning of 2020, she said that she's quite certain that by the end of this year, she's going to be off all medications just by managing her food. Now, in the interview, she mentioned lots of different kinds of eating styles, and she didn't commit to which one she's actually living. But I will put it to you that I think it's some version of low carb because most of her conversation was around carbohydrate intake. But I will also put it to you that I do not believe that she's doing keto or specifically a low carb lifestyle because the other things that she said didn't seem to match up to be doing a keto lifestyle or a specifically low carb lifestyle. At the end of the day, what's important to me is that she recognized that carbohydrates were the cornerstone of what was causing her problem, and she dramatically decreased her carbohydrate intake, and it absolutely improved her health. And that's the part of the story that I want us all to take away from this. What's really frustrating to me is that so many people who are diagnosed with diabetes die because they're led to believe that the main intervention is medication, and they're not informed that there are food options. Or when they are informed about the food options, it's kind of lightly stated as something that you possibly could do, but we recognize how hard it is, so we're giving you this medication. I really do believe that if we would give people credit for wanting to live and help them understand the gravity of having too much sugar in your diet, more people would choose to take sugar out of their diet. But because we keep kind of saying that food could be an option rather than emphatically saying food is the answer, people like Tracy lived 5 years eating excessive amounts of sugar and taking a medication for it, knowing that the sugar was still coming into her body and still doing damage. Well, she didn't know that, but the doctors did. The other thing that Tracy talked about that I absolutely am happy she brought up is that there's no one look to diabetes. You can be overweight and be diabetic. You can be thin and be diabetic. You can be Caucasian, Asian, Black. It doesn't matter. Any human who eats too many carbohydrates can become diabetic. You can be physically active or you can be sedentary. That's not the problem. The problem is how many carbohydrates you're actually eating. One of the things that I love about her saying that there isn't a particular look, although she was talking specifically fat or thin, but I'm talking all of it, is it takes it away from this idea that I am doing something wrong other than following the advice that doctors give. Because doctors continue to push this idea that we need to eat carbohydrates, that fruit is healthy for us to eat, that there's nothing wrong with eating rice and bread, and as long as we do it moderately. Moderate depends on what your metabolic situation is. And if I'm completely metabolically healthy, the problem that I have with moderate is most people still are not aware how many carbohydrates they actually eat in a day. Most people still are not aware how many carbohydrates are healthy for a metabolically stable person to be able to eat in a day. And the problem that I have with moderate is that most people aren't checking. See, one thing that Tracy said that I kind of quibble on is that we should all know our glucose number. I don't think knowing your glucose number is as important as knowing how much carbohydrate can the typical person eat and stay metabolically healthy. Now, if I'm going to go with just what logic tells me, you see, a metabolically healthy person could very likely live a low carb lifestyle and stay metabolically healthy. But is that guaranteed? No. This is a guess, right? Because there are so many people who go from eating the standard American, standard Canadian diet, which is about 300 grams of carbs per day, down to a low carb lifestyle of 125 or less, and absolutely improve their health, and absolutely maintain stable weight, and absolutely do not have other symptoms that indicate that they're not healthy. Now, those people started off metabolically okay. So it kind of gives the impression that if I always lived a 125 or less life, it gives the impression that I might have been okay. But what's even more interesting to me is that if you eat a keto lifestyle, which now means you're eating 20 grams of carbs or less, even metabolically unhealthy people get back to a state of health. But what is that telling us? To me, what it's actually saying is that the safe number for all humans is 20 grams or less. The safe number for all humans. Now, I think it's even less than that, to be honest with you. I think the safe number for all humans is to go back to eating the way we used to eat, which is, mostly meat. And that would mean that we weren't really having much carb. But this is safe numbers versus real numbers versus what am I trying to accomplish? What's frustrating to me is that doctors are not talking about this information at all. Tracy's idea that you should know your glucose number, that number changes and fluctuates all the time. But the number of carbohydrates that I choose to eat in a day won't change. And I can monitor that easily without attaching anything to me. I can just track my food, right? It's easy to do. So that was a place, one of the places that Tracy and I kind of disagreed, because I think you should track how much carb you intake. She thinks you should track your glucose numbers. I'm not really sure how much one of those glucose meters costs. How easy is it to use? And you know what? If it's cost effective, I do think if we can do it, everyone should do it. If it's not cost effective, tracking your food is easier. It's free. 99.9% of the time, it's free. So, something to think about. The other point that I want to make about diabetes is by the time you've received your diagnosis, your body's actually on a decline towards death. And what we're not paying attention to, but I want you to start paying attention to, is this. If it were not for the medication, we would die. That's significant. Every person who is currently taking a medication for diabetes is still with us right now because they're taking the medication for diabetes. When we understand that we could reverse this scenario with food, there's a big question as to why we're taking a medication to solve something that we could solve with food. I want to point out how frustrating that last idea is because Tracy talks about the fact that there are people in the United States right now who do not have enough money to afford their diabetes medication. And these people are risking their life by eating food and then either not taking their medication or not taking the full dose of their medication. And that's extremely frustrating to me because, once again, all of these people could be managing their diabetes by eating fewer carbohydrates. And why aren't they aware that they have that option? The majority of the reason that most of these people are unaware that that's actually an option is because they're not being told that it's an option. That doctors continue to this day to push this idea that we need to eat carbohydrates. Even people who clearly are having toxic reactions to carbohydrates. Tracy was very, very delicate in the manner in which she was talking about the idea that we could replace the carbohydrates in our life. For example, she spoke about talking to a lady who was of Asian descent and letting this lady know that, well, instead of eating rice 4 times a day, you could eat it twice a day. I understand that we're trying to be sensitive to all the different cultures, and I understand that politically it could be a little bit dicey to tell people not to eat something that's culturally specific to them. I want us all to think about the flip side of the coin because that's where I feel like we make the mistake sometimes. For me, if I put in perspective the idea that not feeding my grandmother carbohydrates could have meant that she would have been with me for another 10, 20 years, that she would have gotten to meet my daughter. Do I think that I would have pushed the idea? Grandma, stop eating rice. Grandma, stop eating potatoes. Grandma, eat meat. Eat fish. She loved fish. It's too important of a topic for us to be delicate in telling people what the answer is, because we know the answer. Doctors have been talking about this answer for years. Research has been done on this topic for years. We know what the answer is. Eat fewer carbohydrates, to the extent, much more than what Tracy was saying, 20 grams of carbs or less, right? That's part of the answer if you're diabetic. It's not necessarily the answer if you're not diabetic yet, but it's the answer if you're diabetic, 20 grams of carbs or less. I know I'm sounding a little frustrated here, but part of my frustration comes from the fact that I've done some research. And in my research, listening to all the doctors who are currently talking about this topic, it is so clear. Our body makes all the carbohydrates that we need, and our body makes it when we need it. We are never in a state where we are lacking in carbohydrates when we eat normally, right? People have been living carnivorous lifestyles, some of them for years. No problem. Sean Baker's a classic example. Doctor who has muscles for days. Dr. Ken Berry also decided to do a carnivore challenge for himself, bulked up in muscles for days. We don't need to eat carbohydrates. We eat them because they're fun. And I will admit that I eat them because they're fun. Do I eat them in excess of 20 grams per day? Not at all, never. But I do eat them because they're fun. Do I also go days and days and days without eating them on occasion? Yeah, right? I flip back and forth. And partially I do that because I know that in the small quantities that I'm eating carbohydrates, I'm not overloading my system. Now, I'm often talking about 20 grams of carbs or less because that's the keto number that Dr. Westman has been very clear about. He believes from the research, from talking to other doctors, from his clinic, he works with clients and helps them to manage their diabetes. 20 grams of carbs or less total. Most people get into a ketogenic state and manage their diabetes. Your body can manage. So I often say 20 grams of carbs or less per day. In actuality, if you watch the last video I did with Pat, if you actually look at my plate most of the time, if I eat 15 grams of carbs in a day, that's a big day for me. And oftentimes I'm eating somewhere around 7. Why? No one's forcing me to do this. I'm not forcing me to do this. The truth is, that's what I find interesting at this point. When I eat carbohydrates, the foods that I'm choosing, which are delicious to me, comes up to around 7 grams of carbs. Am I telling you to eat 7 grams of carbs or less per day? No, I'm not, because the number is 20, right? But my point is this, idea that we need carbohydrates, I am from the Caribbean. That's my family history, the Caribbean. Of course, I was eating 300 grams of carbs a day just like everybody else. Rice, potatoes, carrots, pasta, bread, all the time. And that's just talking about the meals. Don't get me started on the chocolate that I was eating. Well, my thing was chocolate, but I mean, I wasn't saying no to cookies. I wasn't saying no to ice cream. Look. This is an important topic because we really do have to understand that it's our health on the line here. The American Diabetes Association is going to change. We can tell this lady, she's learning and she's incorporating what she learns back into the way she talks to the world. And hopefully it's going to be showcased in what the American Diabetes Association will be encouraging everyone to do. I want to point out that until those changes get into place, we still need to be doing our research and trying to do at this moment in time what's best for us. Another spot where we agreed is that when you stop eating carbohydrates to excess, you start to find other foods delicious. And she didn't go into detail about this, but I want to just give you a little bit of background on why that would be. You see, carbohydrates are addictive. When you take the majority of carbohydrates out of your life, your body changes. So your mouth, what you taste, changes. The dopamine hit that you were getting from the sugar, you're no longer chasing it. That's the addictive quality of sugar. And because you're not chasing that dopamine hit anymore, and your palate has changed, vegetables that you once thought were bland. I will even go as far as to say that I used to hate avocado, and now it's one of my favorite things to eat. Why? My palate changed. I used to hate cauliflower. Now I don't mind it. Why? My palate changed. So the thing that I need you to understand is that if we continue to allow ourselves to engage the addictive quality of sugar, and we continue to allow ourselves to have that dopamine hit, then when we say things like, I like potatoes, when we say things like, I like cookies, we need to understand that that's not true. It's actually that you're addicted to cookies, that you're addicted to rice, and but because that carbohydrate is causing a dopamine reaction that pushes your body to chase that food. It's tricky because we don't recognize that that's what's happening because we actually think we like these things. We actually think that we just want to eat it. But stop and ask yourself this. If I said to you, you're not going to eat bread anymore, you're not going to eat rice anymore, and your reaction is, I can't live without, does that remind you of anything? You tell an alcoholic that they're not allowed to drink anymore, they can't live without. The truth is, of course, you can. But why did you have that reaction? Right? It's so interesting to me that because we've endorsed eating all the sugar, we don't even recognize that addictive reaction when it's right in front of us. Right? But if you were to say to someone, this weekend there's no alcohol, and someone in the group piped up and went, what? How can we get through an alcohol a weekend without alcohol? You'd be looking at them like, okay, alcoholic. Why do we not see it when it comes to food and sugar? One of the places that I had a little bit of difficulty with this interview was the idea that we shouldn't be asking people not to eat certain things. And but this is not coming from Tracy alone. Doctors say this all the time, that, for example, a ketogenic lifestyle is too difficult for people to maintain. I know that I've been maintaining it now for almost 2 years. I know that there are lots of people who have been maintaining it for plus 10, plus 15, plus 20 years. But the idea that if I ask someone to give up eating certain things and they're not able to give up eating those certain things, then it's a waste of time to ask them to give it up. That idea is a mistake. You see, we don't ask people to work out because we think they're going to. We ask people to work out because having more muscle on your body leads you to be stronger, it leads to better flexibility, and it leads to you living longer. Now, everybody has a choice to make. Are you going to work out? That's up to you. But the doctor still tells you that it's the right thing to do. Right? We haven't stopped telling people that. Well, I feel like we need to take the same stance with food. It's not because it's difficult to do that we shouldn't tell people what the right thing to do is surrounding sugar. We should be very clear. We should give numbers. We should define the fact that carbohydrate and sugar are equivalents. This is the chemical word, carbohydrate, and this is the layman's word, sugar, but they're equivalent. When we say cut down on sugar, and the average person who's not been to medical school or any kind of science classes or whatever doesn't know that when they read the back of the package, sugar is carbohydrate. See, this is another thing that we need to understand is that food companies trick people. And they know that most people don't know that carbohydrate and sugar are two words for the same thing. And for those people who are aware that carbohydrate and sugar are two words for the same thing, when they write ingredients on packages, well, then they'll do this other thing where they'll say, well, we've added sugar, so that will be one ingredient. But then they'll say that they've added high fructose corn syrup, that's a code word for sugar. They'll say they've added maltose, that's a code word for sugar. They'll say they've added glucose, that's another word for sugar. When you look at some labels of what's been put into the food, sometimes I've been able to find out of 17 ingredients, five of them are different words for sugar. That means that each of those spots, that's a sugar that they've added, and they're using the chemical name to trick us. But in actuality, they put five different sugars in this thing that we're eating. And then they label it healthy. It's important for us to understand that food companies do that. Because if we don't, even if we're trying to do what the doctor has asked us to do and cut down our sugar, if I don't know that carbohydrate is sugar, I'm not going to know to look out for that on the package. We don't even look at how much sugar is in rice because we're looking at it, it's rice. So they haven't added any sugar to the rice. They didn't need to add sugar to rice. Rice is a carbohydrate. Wheat is a carbohydrate. Corn is a genetically modified carbohydrate. Pasta is a carbohydrate because it's made from wheat. Are you starting to see the pattern? There's so many things that we don't label as sugar because natural fruit is a carbohydrate. Because they're not man-made, we don't think there's been sugar added to them. And we're right, there hasn't been sugar added to them. They're grown with their own sugar. So when our doctors are asking us to please cut down the amount of sugar that you're eating, for the doctors that do tell us, my doctor did, but my doctor didn't take the time to do that translation for me, and I hadn't actually allowed myself to notice that, yeah, it was written twice. There's something else that I think is important for us to allow ourselves to understand. When I take a medication to solve a problem, the medication is supposed to solve the problem. So, for example, you have a headache, you take the medication, and the headache goes away. But what happens when you are diabetic and you take diabetes medication? The diabetes doesn't actually go away. The actual issue that we're trying to resolve doesn't get resolved, it gets masked. What does that mean? Our body is put in a situation where it's forced to take the sugar that we're eating and put it away as fat so that it's not floating around in our blood where it can cause damage. And there's two issues with this that I think we all need to understand. If I eat it, it needs to be processed before the medication can get to it to put it away. The same way that when I was eating it, it needed to be processed before my own insulin could get to it to put it away. And in that processing time, some of that sugar is going to affect my body because, as she rightly pointed out, blood touches every part of my body. Well then, every time that you eat sugar, knowing that you're diabetic, you're allowing the damage that sugar does to continue to happen all over your body. That's significant information that I want you to think about because the medication didn't solve the diabetes and the medication didn't stop the sugar from being dangerous to your body. The whole reason that insulin pulls sugar out of the blood and stores it away as fat is because it's dangerous to the body. It is so important for us to understand that eating sugar all by itself, so eating any carbohydrate heavy food all by itself causes damage, regardless of how quickly my body can go in and clean up. And I want you to think about it like that. You make a mess, your body cleans up. You make a mess, your body cleans up. So can you imagine if every day you pour some water on the table, you leave it for a few minutes, and you wipe it off. And a wood table. And you pour some more water on the table, you leave it for a few minutes, and you wipe it off. And you just keep doing that every day in the same spot, right? Because don't forget, the blood goes everywhere in your body. Eventually, you're actually going to have some damage that happens on that spot that you keep pouring water, you leave it for a little while, and then you wipe it up. And you pour it, right? Because you're doing it, first of all, every day in the same spot. Over and over and over again. Our body can only clean up, but the damage is already happening before it can go in and clean up. If the medication truly worked, our diabetes would go away. It doesn't work. But guess what works? Eating 20 grams of carbs or less works. People who eat 20 grams of carbs or less their diabetes actually reverses. It goes away. Don't take my word for it. I'm not a doctor. Dr. Westman has multiple cases that he talks about on his channel, Adapt Your Life. Dr. Barry, Dr. Mason, Dr. Nally. There's so many doctors talking about this. The fact that they were able, Dr. Fung, that they were able to help people manage their diabetes with food and diet. And as a matter of fact, from what we can tell, Tracy is also in the process of healing her diabetes with diet, which leads me to another frustration that I had, because near the end of the interview, Tracy talks about how they have a big push to try to make medication more affordable so that everybody can have access to their medication. And of course, I agree that people who need a medication should have access to that medication. It needs to be cost effective for them. And so she talked about looking at all the different players and how these players come into, you know, why is it being blocked that people can't afford their medication? I would love to see her also focus on all the different players that continue to push this idea that we need to eat carbohydrates. I would love to see her focus on helping to find out why the food industry has been allowed to have such a huge impact on the way that food is marketed towards us with no limits from the government. I think the government needs to step in and recognize that the food industry is more interested in making money off the profits from the foods that's killing us than recognizing that maybe these are foods that we should no longer be making. Stephanie talked about how granola is marketed as something that's good for us, and then you look at how many carbohydrates in it, and it's like, it's crazy numbers, right? But that's everything. That's our breakfast cereal. That's the snacks we give our children in their lunchbox. Diabetic and diet foods have sugar in them. And for the ones that actually don't have extra sugars in them, they have sweeteners in them. And the sweeteners react in the body like sugar, and we know it. Yet these foods are being marketed towards people who are either diabetic or trying to diet. And we know that their body's going to react to it like real sugar and react to the actual sugar that's in it. The mission that she's on to make medication for diabetes affordable, I think, needs to be there, because there will always be people who need that medication. And I feel like it should be part of a chain, where part one of the chain is make sure the person gets the medication and stays alive, so that we can do part two of the chain, which is teach the person how to eat a low carb lifestyle, a keto lifestyle, and get them off all this medication. That way, they can actually spend their money on healthy food and then activities so that they can go out there and live that amazing life that they want to be living. So she brought up the fact that when we were kids, we absolutely spent more time outside because we didn't have the internet and we didn't have all these fancy video games and all the stuff that our kids have today. And I also feel like we spent more time outside because our parents valued something about being outside. And so, yes, I think that most people spent a lot of time outside as children. And the side effect of being outside more is A, you're using your body to maneuver around the world, so there's exercise involved in that. But there's another sneaky side effect I think most people don't recognize when we're talking about why our children are heavier today than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. And to me, the obvious part of that story is this. When we were outside running around with our friends, we were having fun. And when you're having fun, you are distracted. And so when you're distracted, oftentimes you don't notice that you're hungry. And so maybe you weren't hungry, or maybe that you kind of were hungry for a bit and you got past it because you're having so much fun. But the bigger point that I'm trying to make here is that you were outside having fun, hanging with friends, not thinking about food. Versus in the house, on a video game, snacking while you play. In the house, watching TV, snacking while you watch. In the house, just bored, snacking because you're bored. I think our children are also being fed what we've learned to eat over the last, you know, since 1970, And we've learned bad habits, so we're teaching them bad habits. All of these things need to change. So Tracy spoke a bit about discrimination. So the discrimination issue brought up culture. And is it okay to ask people of a certain culture not to eat culturally specific foods like rice and dumplings and that kind of thing? And the idea being that, first of all, we're going to look at people with diabetes differently because they have diabetes and we blame them. But the flip side being that in these cultures, they are eating these foods. And again, we blame them because you eat these foods. So of course you're going to be diabetic, part one. But then part two is that we don't really acknowledge that as a whole on the planet that we shouldn't be eating these foods. Like, so high carbohydrate foods, not specifically cultural foods. Interestingly, Tracy had an interesting take on this because she pointed out that although minorities do tend to suffer diabetes at a larger rate than Caucasians in the United States, she pointed out that globally, 1 in 2 people are pre-diabetic. I'm going to take this in a different direction than she took this. You see, to me, what that's talking about is the fact that when a minority finds out that they're diabetic and they're talking to their doctor, well, the doctor has this attitude that, well, if you're Asian, yeah, you're going to eat rice. Or if you're Black, you're going to eat rice. You know, you're going to eat dumplings. Like, these are your foods. And so because of that, they don't truly push this idea that you need to take these foods out of your life if you would like to live a long, healthy life and reverse this diabetes situation. I believe that minorities also tend, especially in the United States and poorer neighborhoods, tend to live in neighborhoods where they don't have as much access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And now this happens in other parts of the world as well, in countries that are more impoverished than Canada or the United States, where they just don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so they don't even have the opportunity to eat more veg and meat because the processed foods is what's shelf-stable, and that's what they have access to. In the U.S., again, the fact that you can go in the United States in a poor neighborhood and buy soda cheaper than milk, buy cookies cheaper than vegetables, that the cost of meat is almost unimaginable to most poor neighborhood people. The fact that that's a reality for a lot of people living in the United States and in Canada on some level says something. So, you know, I don't think that Tracy saw that part of the story when she was talking about it. I think she's looking at this from the point of view of culturally, we want to eat the way our culture is. I don't think that's the problem, because I can guarantee you that if I had the choice between staying alive and eating a roti, well, I've already made that decision. I'd rather stay alive. I don't eat the rotis anymore, right? And I think most people would make that decision if they knew it was a life or death situation. You know, we have a hard time looking way into the future and making decisions today that are for over there. But I think the other reason that we have that trouble is because we're presented with the idea that, well, it's so far away. Guess what? 10 years is not that long. It really isn't. And from the day that you have diabetes, 10 years is not long. You might not make 10 years if you continue to eat 300 grams of carbs a day. Now, some people do, right? All the complications that we're going to live between now and those 10 years, is it worth it for some people? I would posit that it should be worth it for everybody to take the carbohydrates out of your life. It also frustrates me when we try to blame genetics for diabetes. Diabetes is a condition that's brought on by eating carbohydrates. That's not genetic. That's learned, right? This is the way that my family cooked, and then I cook that way, and so on and so on and so on. And how do I know it's not genetic? It's learned. I know that because when doctors take people and tell them 20 grams of carbs or less, and those people follow it, their diabetes goes away. That's not genetic. That's environment teaching me to do something and me following along with it. We need to stop blaming genetics. We need to stop blaming our culture. We need to look squarely at the professionals who are not telling us how to manage it and ask them to be honest with us about how to manage it. I'm truly looking forward to the day where sugar is treated like a toxin, because it is a toxin, and you have to ask to get access to it. The same way that you have to ask to get access to cigarettes, the same way that you have to ask to get access to alcohol, the same way that you have to ask to get access to any substance that's potentially dangerous to your health. That children can't just walk into the store and buy cookies and candy. I'm looking forward to the day that sugar is put behind a barrier to help us to live healthier lives, rather than being at the checkout counter to increase the possibility that we get sick. I really think that when they do that, when they put it behind a barrier and the health of the world increases, then we're, or at least North America increases, then we're going to truly start to understand how severely sugar was affecting us. But until that happens, until they block us from having access to it, we're going to keep doing this. And we're going to keep acting as if there's nothing wrong with eating sugar because we don't see the effects of the negative right away. Alcohol, you see it right away. Cocaine, you see it right away. Sugar, you don't see it right away. And we're making the mistake of thinking that because I don't see it right away, it must not be happening. That's not the case. I want everyone to keep in mind that every piece of medical fact that we happen to know today came from an understanding of our body. So our body gave us that information. That means that we need to stop trying to believe that we can force our body to do something that it's not planning to do. We're trying to tell our body how much carbohydrate it's going to have, rather than respect how much carbohydrate it's telling us that it wants. And the truth is, it wants zero. We make the carbohydrates that we need. I'm looking forward to see the changes that Tracy D. Brown brings to the American Diabetes Association. Be a true wellness warrior. Prioritize eating healthy over the taste of food. Love that you guys are here as always. Everyone who's new, subscribe, ring the bell. I make videos every week. If you want to contribute to the production of videos, Patreon, Amazon links in the description below. Love talking to you guys. Thank you for watching Mind Blowing Health and Wellness with Violet. I'm your keto psychologist, and I'll talk to you again next week.